The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week of every year for more years than I care to count, we've been bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And so today's topic, if you've ever had the thought, I don't understand why in the heck anybody would ever do one of these option things. Today is your day. I've been approached with that so many times in the last 6 months. I kind of understand what an option is, but I don't understand why people put money up on a property that they then can't even buy for, sometimes I'm hearing, decades in a row. We're going to try and explain that to you today, kind of give you some perspective on what options are, what their function is, and what kind of person thinks that's a really good investment to put down money today and not buy the property for years and years and years. To help with this discussion, I have not one but two guests with me today. One is here in the studio. The other one is joining us by phone. Here in the studio, I have Miss Lori Wolf, who is a real estate investor out of the Central Ohio area, who is a newcomer to options relative to our other guest. Glommed onto him real hard about 2 years ago, figured him out, and is doing some really interesting stuff with them around particularly the Central Ohio area. So welcome to the studio, Lori.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
My other guest is, of course, Mr. Bill Cook. Everybody kind of knows that Bill is the options guy. He's been doing real estate since God was a child and has used options in lots of different ways over many, 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 many years. He's joining us by phone from someplace, maybe Georgia, maybe Florida. I'm not actually sure where you are right now, Bill, but
I am in Florida.
He lives a peripatetic lifestyle, ladies and gentlemen, so it's hard to know without asking.
Since God was a child? What?
So Bill is also going to be one of the featured guest speakers at our workshop day at the National Real Estate Investing Summit, coming up here in Cincinnati on October 31st through November 3rd. I know you guys have been waiting for Vina to say National Real Estate Summit since last November. All you listeners are like, when is that going to happen? She always talks about that. Yep, well, it's October 31st through November 3rd here in Cincinnati, and Bill has an entire three-hour workshop all to himself to talk about options. And so anything that you don't get answered today, especially if you walk away going, oh gosh, I do need to do those, as it turns out, I didn't think I did, but now I know I do. Sign up for the National Summit. We'll have some sort of a listener offer about that a little bit later on. So welcome to you as well, Bill. And I'm going to actually throw the first question to you, because I think we need to start by just getting people oriented around the idea of a pure option and what it is. Like, there's a lot of people in real estate who think that option is half of a word that starts lease. Like, no, I know what a lease option is. That's not the same thing. So can you just give us like the 1 minute high level view of what an option is and what it does?
Happy to, but first, can you answer a question for me?
Probably not. I'm thinking no. And I'm reminding you, by the way, that we're on live radio. So,
I'm aware, but has there ever in the 32 year history of the radio show, has there ever been two beautiful, smart, wise deal makers who happen to be redheads in that radio station?
Oh, see, I thought he was going for it was you and him.
No, I thought so too. The two of you.
I was about to say, and yeah, no, and there still haven't been as of this day. No, that's not true. Donna Bauer's been sitting here with me, so this is the second time.
Okay, pretty cool. And then to answer your question, most people know of options, a lease option, where a lease is involved, and you kind of touched on that. A lease gives someone use of the property, and the option gives someone the right to buy it. So that's known as a lease with an option to buy. So two different tools, two different documents, two different things working together, two different tools working together. When you're doing a pure option, then that's just the option by itself, and there's not a lease involved. It's just the option is being used. So in other words, what you're acquiring is the right to buy a property at a future date or within a future or within a time period, a pre-agreed to price and pre-agreed to terms.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that pre-agreed on date is a decade from now or 2 decades from now. I mean, if it was 30 days from now, we'd probably just use a purchase contract because that says the same thing, right? I'm going to buy for this much money. It's going to happen 30 days from now, and here are the terms. An option is kind of like that, except sometimes flung way out into the future.
I did one last year that was 70 years, and I will not be alive in 70 years. I am 64, but it's a 70-year option.
Why would you do such a thing?
Because I could. So it's part of a loan that I did, but as part of the loan, I got the right to buy a 10% interest in a mobile home park in Rome, Georgia. And anytime in the next 70 years, I can exercise that right to buy a 10% interest in the park. And I do that a lot of times when I'm doing lending.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the loan, I also get a pure option.
Okay. So when we come back from the break, we're going to explore a little bit the various ways in which options are used, because I think people have this idea, like here's the idea I had about options before I really understood how they were used in residential real estate. You either get an option on a piece of farmland that's 30 miles outside the city because you think that at some point the city is going to like expand out into that area. So you want the right to buy that land should it ever become way more valuable than it is. But you also want the right not to buy it if it's still a farm 30 years from now. So that was like one thing that I thought options did. And then the other thing I thought they were used for was like commercial real estate, because sometimes, you want to, you're the one wanting to develop the 30 acres, but first you have to find out, will the city allow the zoning? Will the septic tank, carry it? Am I going to be able to find contractors? So I might put it under option for 6 months to do due diligence, but then I'm going to close it. It turns out it's kind of neither. I mean, yes, it's both of those things, but it's also kind of neither one of those things. And I want to talk to both of you about some of the things that options are good for. We'll do that right after we come back from this break. If you got questions about options, listeners, you have a couple of options. Boy, this is going to be a confusing conversation. One is that you can call into the studio at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or you can send an email. Just send it to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guests today are Lori Wolf here in the studio and Bill Cook, who is joining us by phone. And the topic is options, like pure options, like options with no lease involved. And we've already talked about that it's kind of like a purchase contract, except it has a really, really, really long term. Or, I mean, it can have a six-month term, but the way you hear people talk about them is, I have a 10-year option to buy, I have a 7-year option to buy, I have a 20-year option to buy. And I think as I talk to people, the big area of confusion is, wait. You put $5,000 or $13,000 or $25,000 down as an option fee on a property that's going to generate no income whatsoever until such time as you spend more money exercising your option. How is this even a thing? It sounds like a sucker bet. So let's talk about some of the ways that these things are used so that you listeners can maybe understand a little bit better about like who's on the other side of this option, like who's taking that money and saying, yes, I will sell you my house later on. And I want to start with you, Lori, because you have found a particular population amongst sellers.
Correct.
For whom this is a godsend.
Yes, I've been told your solution to my problem is too good to be true.
Mm-hmm. So talk about what you're doing with them.
So I started looking at foreclosures as a lead source back in 2021. And some of those leads, as they come forward, there are people that don't want to sell their home, yet they still have a problem. They're in foreclosure. And eventually they're going to be facing an auction date. So my solution to them is, I will cure the default on your mortgage and bring your loan current again.
Jargon flag. Psh, jargon flag, cure the default. What was that?
It didn't take long. So when somebody's in foreclosure, it's because they're behind on their mortgage by X amount of payments or however many years. And there's a large amount of money needed to bring that loan back into good standing with the bank.
Huge amounts right now.
Can be.
Huge amounts.
I've seen some quite large amounts, and they're all over the place.
Yeah, I talked to a seller this morning who the balance on his loan is 37 and his back payments are 40.
Yeah.
His back payments are literally bigger than if he could pay off the back payments, he would only owe $37,000 on his house. Mm-hmm. But the bank wants 40. They won't take any payments from him.
Nope.
They
want, it's all a lump sum. They want it now.
$40,000 and they want it right now. And of course, if he had that, he would have been making the payments.
Correct. People do want to make the payment, but they can make the payment as it was monthly, not the huge sum that they're owed now.
Mm-hmm.
So with that problem moving over people's heads, they're very aware that they have a problem, but they don't want to sell. They have kids in school, you know, that may not reach graduation age for 10 years or more. They like the home that they're in. They may want to sell in the future, but they don't know that exact date. So,
and they can't afford to move anywhere.
No. With interest rates the way they are and low inventory, people are really wanting to stay put for as long as they can.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you fix a problem for people that want to stay in their home, yet they need a lot of money from somewhere to get it right with the bank? They probably won't qualify for a loan because obviously when you're in foreclosure, you're not really a prime candidate for a bank to look at you for a loan. So there's very little opportunities for people to right the ship if you don't have family or somebody close by that's in your wheelhouse to fix things for you or help you out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I've come in. So utilizing options, I can use the money from in the vehicle of an option to bring their loan current in exchange for the right to buy the home in that future date, 10, 20 years out, when their kids are out of school, when they've graduated high school or college, whatever it is, and make that purchase at that later date when we agree that would be, you know, each one of these are custom. You know, the amount is different for everybody. The term of when we make the purchase is different. The manner in which I'll make the purchase is different. So they're all custom solutions, but generally it's the same thing, as an option is the vehicle to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. So I will give you the money to make up the back payments, but I'm not going to give it to you. You want to keep owning the house and living there. So I can't just here, pay me back someday. What's paying you back is your right to get that house 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, depending on the seller up the road, at a set-to-day price.
Correct.
So even if that set today price is pretty close to what the house is worth today,
mm-hmm.
it's not what the house is going to be worth 10 years from now.
Right. And nobody has a crystal ball to know exactly what that number would be. So there's a little bit of finagling or massaging of what that could look like in the future.
Mm-hmm. And now the interesting thing is, if you ask anybody who has been investing since, say, pre-2005, and you say, would you like to have locked in the 2005 prices, which we all thought were crazy high because like the market was going crazy, right? And would you like to have locked in the price on any property you can choose in 2005 and be able to buy it at that price today?
Absolutely.
And they will all say, oh my God.
And not only that, but then to know that my price, whatever that price was, then you subtract off the amount that I gave as the option consideration, so it's actually a lower price. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Lori, your primary, like, person that you've kind of made this work with is people in foreclosure.
Correct.
Bill, talk about some of the uses that you have used them with sellers, and then we will wind backwards to what you, something you said before, which is getting an option to buy when you are the seller.
Okay, let me make sure I understand the question. Do you mean to talk about when I'm doing an option with someone who's wanting to sell or when someone is not wanting to sell?
Well, so when you've got someone who owns a property, they own the property,
yeah.
not you, and you're going to pull the option out of the tool bag. Why? Under what circumstances would you be saying, well, let's, instead of me buying it, let's do an option?
Most of the time, if someone is, and Lori really hit on this well, is someone who does not want to sell. There's something called a tactical option that I can use when someone wants to sell and move quick, but most of the option work I've done, like 99%, have been strategic options, which are when people don't want to sell. And give you a good example, this just happened. There's a girl named Drusilla, a friend of mine in St. Pete, and she wanted me to look at a house in Venice, Florida, and this is where we're staying. So I just stopped by the house two hours ago, and when I was going through the neighborhood to see the house she was thinking about buying, I saw a crew, and they were replacing a septic tank at a house, and this neighborhood has all septic tanks and all wells. It's on the south side of Venice. And I stopped and knocked on the neighbor's door and asked, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, doing a septic tank, and tell me what's involved and how much it costs. And it was going to cost her $17,000 for a new septic tank. And I just said, out of curiosity, how would you like to not have to pay for the septic tank? And she just kind of looked at me, and I said, what if I paid the $17,000 for you for the new septic tank? Would you give me the right to buy your house at some point in the future? Now, I'm going to go back and meet with she and her husband. We're going to have that discussion. But that's the type of – that's where option work really comes in when someone does not want to sell. Mm-hmm. And that's an offer I'm working on right now today. It just happened.
Mm-hmm. Why not just loan her the –
Does that answer the question or not?
Yeah. Why not just loan her the $17,000 and let her make payments to you?
A couple reasons. First is she is a homeowner, and a rule of mine is I don't loan to people who are owner-occupants. Because of Dodd-Frank and a number of the laws, I just chose not to do that. I used to do that until 2010, but don't do it anymore. And instead, what I'll do is I will, again, pay for the, in this case, the septic tank, which is $17,000. But remember, this is not a loan. So therefore, she doesn't owe me the money back. There's no payments. There's no interest. This is not a loan. What I'm doing is acquiring a right to buy her house in the future. And a good example of that is I'm reading the biography on Jimmy Stewart right now. And one of the things we were talking about is the Philadelphia Story, which is one of my favorite movies. And Katharine Hepburn is the one who bought that story and brought it to Broadway, and she played in it on Broadway. And then she sold the rights to, I think, MGM, but in selling the rights, she also had an option where she could choose to be in the movie and pick her two leading men, which turned out to be Jimmy Stewart and Cary Grant. So that was another example of option work for something in the future. So she gave up something, but it got something in return.
So let's talk about, because this, I think there are probably people sitting there going, this does sound too good to be true. Like, you're going to buy my house when I'm done with it, but I get all this money up front. This is, in the meantime, I owe no payments and no interest. This is suspicious. Let's just lay out what it is the homeowner is giving up by giving someone, I say giving, by letting someone pay them for an option to buy their house. What is it that they lose by doing that?
I'd like to hear Lori answer this question. She's very good at what she's doing. And she's sitting there, she's at a lot of kitchen tables.
Yes, I am. So I'm not giving them the money. The money would go straight to the bank. You know, just to make sure that the money's used as for the intended purpose. So
yes, because if the bank forecloses, your option goes away.
Correct. So even when Bill is saying he's going to take care of the septic tank, he's not giving the money to the homeowner. He's going to pay the septic tank company just to make sure everything goes where it's intended to go. So when doing these things, it's an exchange. So I am giving the money to the bank to make things right on their side with the mortgage in exchange for the right to buy the home in the future. I'm also going to make sure that I have a little bit of a discount built in on my purchase price. And that's of interest to me and of value to me for that future date to make that purchase later.
Mm-hmm.
And a
good example of what Lori's saying, going back to the septic tank, this property's value is probably somewhere about $300,000 to make the numbers easy. And so if we both agree this is the value of the property, my strike price, in other words, my agreed to purchase price would be $300,000 minus the $17,000 for the septic tank. So my purchase price would be, $280,000, whatever it is. Y'all do the math. But anyway, $280,000 at any time in the next 10 years, 20 years, we still have to agree to that.
So, To put it in just a few words, what they're giving up is future appreciation on their house.
Correct. We've kind of capped that.
Exactly right.
Yep.
And so, you know, for somebody who does not have a problem, they don't have a $17,000 septic tank to put in, they don't have $40,000 worth of back payments that they've got to make, appreciation might be important to them. They might be thinking, well, you know, in 20 years, I want to leave this house to my kid and I want it to be like their whole, you know, it'll be worth $500,000 and that'll get them set off in life or something like that. But I think one of the things people have trouble grasping is that appreciation isn't important to everybody. For a lot of these homeowners, the most important thing is I have a place to live that I can afford and I'm comfortable in. And after I'm dead,
know.
I don't care.
Yeah, different things for different people. It's not everybody values the same thing. So somebody that does not value the future equity and really wants that security for their kids to stay in that home for as long as they need to, that's paramount. That's the number one thing. So these options, it's an exchange. It's a trade. I'm looking at the equity as a valuable thing for me. You're looking at the right to use the home for as long as you want without this stress of the foreclosure hanging over you. And that's a good deal for a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and an appreciation is not guaranteed.
Correct.
I was doing options in 2005 and 2006 and a couple in 2007. But guess what happened in 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12?
Mm-hmm.
Values went well below my option price. So options are not a guarantee, so investors need to understand that also. So there's a lot that goes into option work and much due diligence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And in those cases, you walk away from your option fee and say, I lost the bet.
Right, or you extend the option for an additional.
Or you have the right to extend the option.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for longer, or you have like a 20 or 30 year option, so you wait until the down period has passed.
Mm-hmm. Or you put in a lockout period and say, I'm going to run this option for 20 years, but I'm going to lock it out for 10, meaning that I can't exercise my option, you know, for 10 years. But having that extra additional 10-year buffer out gives me a little bit more security knowing that if there is a dip in the market, I've got time.
And
why would you do the 10-year? Why would you extend it out 10 years, Lori? Why would you not exercise for the first 10 years?
Because say somebody has a 9-year-old and they're going to wait until that kid is out of high school before they want somebody to exercise the option.
Yeah, my experience has been that most, it doesn't matter if it's their homeowner or they're a rental owner that's, you know, looking to get some money or something like that. most people, once you explain what the option is, they get it. They're not sitting there going, well, I don't understand this, but I'm going to sign it.
Right. And we wouldn't be doing the paperwork and going through steps B, C, and D if they didn't understand it.
Yeah. And a lot of them, before I even get to mention we could do a lockout period, they say, well, that's fine, but I wouldn't want you to buy it in the first 5 years.
They will. Yep.
they absolutely know.
Because that's the thing that they want, is they want to know that they're in that home for at least 5 years or 8 years. And then, you know, I always tell them when I'm talking, I'm like, none of us have a crystal ball. We're going to do the best that we can today with what you know you've got on the plate. And then we will structure the paperwork around that. And if we have to adjust, you know, we'll deal with life as it comes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's not as if these homeowners can't grasp it and say, wait, I could do this deal with you and tomorrow you could exercise your option and I don't want that. They get it. They understand.
And I tell them, I said, this isn't a purchase contract. We still have to do that part. This is just the rights to the property in the future date that we've agreed to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We need to take another break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what's disclosed to the seller. And then I want to talk about why in the world somebody would put $17,000 into a property.
Or 40.
That they can't, you know, that they don't even have the right to buy for 10 years. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. You can send in questions to venaradio@gmail.com. Or if you have questions, you can give us a call at 877-772-9658. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to Lori Wolf and Bill Cook about the various ways in which they use options and just trying to make you guys understand what these things are. They might be relevant to you as an investor. You might be somebody who wants to put up the money and invest in the option. They might actually be relevant to you as an investor who needs money. You know, you can sell an option against one of your properties. You can keep it for the next 20 years and then the person with the option gets the right to buy the property, and maybe that's a big deal to you and maybe it isn't. If it isn't, maybe that's a way for you to raise money without having to make payments on the money. We have a whole bunch of listener questions that have built up. So let's start by going to line one and talking to Robert in Kentucky. Robert, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question about option as a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
What protects the person holding the option? Say you sit at the kitchen table, you sign it, everybody understands what's going on. Maybe there is verbiage in your option that covers this, but from that day forward, if the homeowner, the seller, eventual seller, makes no repairs, the roof starts leaking, the air conditioning breaks down, how do you get them to maintain? Pipes are leaking.
Well,
let me maintain the property.
Let me add a couple of things to your concerns list, Robert. What if they stop making the payments to their bank? What if they drop the insurance? What if they stop paying the property taxes? Those are all things that could kind of blow away your option. The house burns down. The house you have an option on burns down and they don't have insurance. Sure, you can buy the smoking hole in the ground for whatever you agree to, but obviously you would not. I mean, that would really likely result in the loss of your option fee. But guess what? All this has been figured out. Who wants to tackle this one, Lori or Bill?
I can start.
Go ahead.
All right. So, Robert, your first question was about what is the paperwork or what secures the buyer. So it's three documents for me in Ohio. If you're in a deed of trust state, it might be a little bit different. But I have a mortgage and an option agreement, and then there's also a list of disclosures that the homeowner would have to sign.
And that mortgage has a particular name, Robert. You're gonna want
$0 mortgage?
Write this down. A mortgage to secure option.
Well, yes. But it is a little bit different than a traditional mortgage that you would sign as a homeowner. And that gets
because there's no note.
Yes.
there's nothing that says you have to make payments.
And
it
there's
just
no
says I have. This property is securing my option to buy, it's securing your promise to sell me this property sometime in the next 10 years for X dollars.
Right. And then that gets recorded in public record. So if there was a default in the future on a loan that these homeowners have, I would be notified because I would show up as an interested party in that property.
But what does it say in the option about you drive by one day, you drive by this house that you've put $20,000 down on, but in theory you've got a 5-year lockout and you can't even exercise your option for 5 years, and there's a giant hole in the roof, and there's no sign that it's being fixed.
Right. So that's all covered in the paperwork as well. You know, when Bill said that, you know, part of this is the terms that we buy or execute these things on. Those terms and those what-ifs are covered in the option agreement, and if those things come true, there's language in there that says these are the next steps that would happen. If they had something where they lapsed on their insurance, I am also a party on their insurance as additional,
insured.
Additional insured, correct. So if that happened, I would be notified as well. So there's several placeholders and things put into writing to make sure that some of these things that you have a concern about, which are valid concerns, are taken care of. And if they come to happen, this is how we handle them.
So let me give you a for instance, Robert. Let's say we do have a lockout period because the seller was in foreclosure. That we've already determined, by the way, this is not just, oh, here's $40,000 for your bank. We need to qualify them to make sure they actually can make the payments going forward, which is maybe different than do they choose to. But, you know, we're making sure that they actually have the income to continue to make their mortgage payments. But then we get notified that they're not. Lockout period no longer applies.
Yep.
I can buy that house right now. It doesn't matter if there was a 5-year lockout because I need to protect my investment against your default.
Yep.
Big hole in the roof. Bill, how do you deal with the... Bill had to do repairs on a house he doesn't own.
Okay, and I'm going to cover the two different ways. One is, Robert, you're going to like this. So when I'm able to inspect the properties whenever I want. That's part of the agreement. And let's say I go by and I see a house needs a new roof, and the new roof's going to be $15,000. Then I will notify the owner of the property, hey, the roof's bad. You need to replace the roof. And let's say they choose not to, because I'll give them a time limit, usually 7 to maybe 14 days, because roofs are important. And if they don't do it, then I'm going to put a new roof on the house. I'm going to make sure the repair is done. However, for every dollar I spend on that roof, I get $5 off my purchase price on the property, the agreed-to purchase price. So I am not angry that I had to replace a roof. My deal just went from good to great.
And
going back to something, to one thing that Lori touched on was, what people don't realize is a mortgage or a deed of trust, they secure promises. People think they just secure notes. They don't. They secure promises. An option is a promise. A purchase and sale is a promise. A promissory note is a promise. So you can use mortgages and deeds of trust to record many things that go into the property's chain of title. And that's how you protect yourself. That's how people know there's an option on this thing. And by the way, almost everybody who ever looks it up, look, you know, the deed dogs who go in and do the lookups, I've never had someone say, oh, this is an option. They all think it is a loan of some type. And they call me, usually ask you for payoff or what's the balance or something along those lines. And that's how I become aware of something going on with the property that I was not aware of before. I get a phone call.
Now, Robert, let me just make an editorial comment here and say that bills, I want five times what I paid for the roof off my purchase price. He's not going to the seller and saying you owe me $75,000. He's saying now I owe you $75,000 less. That is a number that a lot of folks don't use, but many people will say, look, it's your house. I don't own it. It's your job to put the roof on. If you make me put the roof on, I am going to charge you $1.25 or $1.50. I'm not going to charge you. We're going to take that off of what I owe you because it shouldn't be my job. This was a passive investment. You know, I put this money in. I didn't expect to look at it again for 10 years. And now you've made me protect my passive investment. So a lot of people think it's fair to, you know, just for the hassle, and they, oh, now I have to put more cash into it that I thought it was going to, that a deduction of $1.25, $1.50, something like that is very reasonable. So did that...
And Lori touched on one other thing, too. It's very, very important that the person you're working with, the property owner, understand every piece of the option agreement. So I take my time, and we go over it, and we would have covered the roof. And they understand, hey, if this needs a new roof, it's up to you to do it. But if you don't, and you make me work, and you make me come do this, I'll do it, but it's going to become worth my while. I'm not trying to be a jerk. I don't want to pay for the roof. That's your job. But if I have to, this is going to be what it's going to take for me to do it.
Mm-hmm. So did that answer your question, Robert?
Well, it does. It does. And I guess I'm just an old skeptical investor. I have found that it's nice to sit here and talk about it and say, hey, I got it in writing and I explained it to it and everybody shakes their head and everybody signs. But it seems like when it comes to enforcing some of those things, it's not as easy as we're all sitting here making it sound.
Well,
my experience. Yes.
A quick question for you. Let's say you borrow money from Bank of America. So you sign a promissory note. The payments are $1,200 a month, and you promise to keep insurance on the property, and you promise to pay the property taxes. And in every mortgage, it says you must take good care of the property in addition to that, right? What happens if you break one of your promises? What will the lender do? Okay, so what will the lender do if you do not keep up with your promise? What will they do?
They're going to foreclose.
Exactly right. Because of the mortgage, because of the deed of trust. And it's the same thing here. As far as the option, when it's secured by a mortgage or deed of trust, has tremendous teeth.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I've never had to do that. And I've been doing this for more than 20 years. I've never had to foreclose from an option. I just sit down and have a conversation with someone with a glass of sweet tea at the kitchen table. But you're very much protected. Sorry, Vina, go ahead.
Yeah, and Robert, I think the thing that you cannot blow off here is Lori had three documents, right? The option, which you'd expect, the mortgage to secure option, which really, I don't know anyone who's ever foreclosed on one of those. That's really kind of, to my brain, that is protection against the seller's family later deciding that, you know, that we don't have to obey this because dad's dead, we, you know, whatever. And then the third piece, though, is the disclosure. And it, in English, as long as it has to be point by point, initial point by point, people have a really hard time saying, well, I'm not doing this, I didn't understand this, when they have very carefully read and signed every paragraph of an in English detailed disclosure. The other thing that I would say to you, Robert, is I'm betting that you have walked away from real estate deals because you just got a bad feeling about the other guy.
Yes, ma'am.
No other reason. like I just,
right.
The deal's great. It pencils out. I don't know, man. You do the same thing with these options.
Yep.
You never do an option with somebody who doesn't seem to understand it, who seems like, that, you know, they feel, it feels like they're going to try and take advantage. Like, you just get this feeling that they're going to take the money and then later on they're going to say, well, I didn't understand what I was doing.
That's part of my due diligence.
Yeah.
It's the interviewing of the homeowner. Do they understand this? Are they a team player with, you know, working this out?
Is it good for them?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to do a deal where you're like, well, you want to do it, but I'm not sure it's good for you, because that's the kind of thing that causes regrets later.
Yeah. Or yeah, if you, you know, won't answer the phone call, or you say, hey, we'll meet and discuss, and you're not there. You know, all of that stuff matters to me. It shows me what type of person you are, because these are going to run for a long time. I may not come back to you for 20 years. So I need to know that you're a decent person today, because I don't want to have 20 years of arguing and struggle because we did something that wasn't the right solution for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Robert.
All right. Well, thank you for taking time. I appreciate it, and I enjoy the show.
You're welcome. And you should come up to the National Summit in November and let Bill talk at you about this for 3 hours. In fact, he'll talk at you for 3 hours, and then he'll also talk at you about him for the other 72 hours if you want to.
I think I've been to those kind of seminars or conferences before. I know exactly what you're saying. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for calling, Robert. Let's go to Christine on line two in New York City. Christine, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi. I had a question. You sort of answered it already, but just along the lines of, if someone's falling into foreclosure and you resolve the foreclosure for now, but they fall into it again, do you, like, how do you usually handle that situation? Do you try to keep curing it and keep subtracting that amount from the price of the option price?
Oh, okay.
And also, how often do you see that happen?
Okay, so that's a Lori question, and I do want to preface it, Christine, by saying you did hear her say that she looks at the seller's income and expenses and assures herself that they can make that remaining payment, right? Because there's situations where you look at these sellers and you're like, it doesn't matter. Like, you couldn't afford your house if it was paid off. You can't afford the taxes, insurance, and utilities.
There's people that have no income.
Yeah, and
in
so
in foreclosure, like, it's an option is not the right solution. They can't, if I fix this problem, they're going to be right back in the gutter 30 days later. They have zero income. Mm-hmm. So part of the due diligence in looking at people when you do these things is you have to know their finances. If this blip, this foreclosure is a one-off thing and they're able to keep themselves above their head above water and go forward with their financial situation, then it is the right solution. But if somebody's really on the edge and they're not able to afford their living expenses every month and keep the house in good standing, then this isn't the right solution, because they're just going to be right back in it in 30 days and now you're in it with them. Mm-hmm. So if it's that dire or that close, this isn't the right tool to be using.
So, Lori, have you ever had someone default once you pulled them out of foreclosure?
Not yet. Nope.
Bill, have you ever had someone default once you pulled them out of foreclosure?
No, I have not.
So you guys are doing good due diligence.
Yes, but it just shows you that these have to be people that can afford to stay in the home, because there's quite a few that are coming across the plate today that are spending more money than they make, which is why they're in foreclosure, or have no income, which is why they're in foreclosure. So an option is not the right solution for that.
If it did happen to either one of you, what would you do?
The paperwork that I sign with them tells me step by step what I can do. So I could go ahead and talk with them and figure out what that new amount is to bring them current again. We would need to look at their finances and know, is this going to now be a reoccurring problem? And then maybe we need to switch gears. If it's not a reoccurring problem, we can probably bring the loan current. But, you know, like Bill said, if he has to step in and take and put a roof on, if I have to step in and bring more money to the table to make that loan right, I'm going to want that off of my purchase price.
That's less that you owe at the end.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Christine threw something out there that is a possibility. You know, if you had the money sitting around, you could make the payments for them and just deduct it from the option price. I mean, there's all kinds of things that people can do if you got a cooperative.
Right, because we're going to be in this for 10, 20 years. So if something happens, you know, we'll deal with it as it comes. We can't sit today and worry about, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling, but we'll do the best that we can to put everything in place that puts less risk on us, the investor, and gives the homeowner what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know.
But Lori and Vina both said this. The key is, you know, sitting down at the kitchen table and having that conversation and having a good feel about them. And if they're in foreclosure, why are they in foreclosure? Is it because of maybe they got hurt at work or an illness that they've now, all they need to do is just a little bit of break, but they're now able to get back on their feet and they've regained their stride. They just need a little bit of a break. Mm-hmm. So if someone's, Lori did a great job of talking about this, if someone is just not paying their bills or a deadbeat, yeah, then I'm going to turn around and probably have to exercise, well, not probably, there's a very great likelihood I'm going to have to exercise my option immediately because they're not living up to their end of the promise. Mm-hmm. But I've never had to do that in more than 20 years.
I'd also like to say, just if I'm talking with somebody about doing an option and I see that their income isn't where it needs to be, there's something else, then I wait. Like if they're maybe going through a divorce and I'm going to wait and see what the judge says about who owes who, you know, what and where alimony is going, I'm going to wait on that option. So there's still maybe a pending foreclosure, but there might be something else that homeowner needs to work out. So I won't, it may be an option is the right solution, but it's maybe not the right solution today. So I'll wait on something. I've got another one they don't have enough income and they're trying to get a different job. Once that job is there, you know, and their financial situation is different, the foreclosure is still there. So there's still a problem to fix, but I'm waiting for them to get some of their own stuff ironed out before I'll step in and do the option. So it doesn't, just because you're talking to somebody and an option might be the right solution, it might not be the right solution today. You might have to sit on it for a little bit.
And for a lot of people in foreclosure, it may be that the best thing you can do is sell the house. And that happens a lot. It's, they can't afford the house anymore. There's something else going on. And so an option is absolutely the wrong tool to use for those people that maybe, you know, they have time listening with the realtor and getting their house sold regular. Or maybe you buying the house from them quickly and then moving on to another property they can't afford. And the job of an investor is to sit down and have that conversation with them and help them understand their current situation. And sometimes you got to look and say, you can't afford this house anymore. You just, the money's not here. You're just using 70% of your income for a house payment. You can't survive this way.
Right. I had that conversation last month.
When you explain that to someone, a lot of times it's like the weight's lifted off their shoulders and they go, okay, I need to get into something more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't drive a Ferrari. I really need a Honda.
Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, we have another caller on the line that we're not going to be able to get to because we have 2 minutes left. So, Ellis in California, if you would like to send that as an email, send your question as an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. I'll make sure it gets to these folks. We also have two people in the inbox who we weren't able to get to. We can't have two guests on the phones, right, Mike? Okay.
Well, you can, but then you can't take calls.
Yeah, because I'm thinking we just need to do a part two of the show. Seriously, look at all these questions, and we didn't even get to the big one that I need Lori to answer in 60 seconds, and then maybe if we do this again next week, we can fill it out. The money is a big problem. As a matter of fact, I remember having a conversation with you where you said, I'm finding all these option deals, and I'm running out of money to give to people, and I don't know what to do.
Yes. So, because options are... they're relatively expensive. You know, solving somebody's foreclosure problem isn't just $5. It's $50,000. It's $12,000. It's $35,000. I don't have a huge bucket of money sitting there waiting for people to come forward and say, hey, I need help. Like, I get depleted really quickly. So the couple that I did fund them myself because I didn't know where else to pull resources from. And that ran out really fast. But stick with something long enough and you find people that are willing to partner with you and help out and be that money vehicle for you to do these things with folks. And you can also make a fee on top of that for your efforts so that it does provide you income today and not waiting 20 or 10 years for these things to mature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there are other investors who are willing to put up that money.
They are. It took me a while to find them.
Is the bottom line.
Correct.
And you don't get to keep 100% of the option when they put up 100% of the money, but you do get to keep some of it and move on to the next one.
Right. So now I have more money available than I have deals to do.
So yes, unfortunately I'm getting the we are out of time signal. I am going to talk to you guys afterwards about seriously doing
number
this again
two.
Next
sure.
week because we need a part two here. Just want to remind everybody that the Cincinnati RIA National online meeting is tomorrow night. The topic is, are short-term rentals dead? People are ringing the death knells. We got a panel of folks who are doing short-term rentals talking about what's going on the market and the best things to do to make sure your short-term rentals are making money. And one of those people is Bill Cook. So CincinnatiRIA.com to get your link to that. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.